This is the DX Audio Service.
IDXers, Market Scope is back for November 2009. This month, we're listening into legendary Pittsburgh DJ Chuck Brinkman, counting down the hits on Oldies 620 WKHB. Good to hear some local programming.
KHB, soul singer Freddie Scott. We're checking in with number 46 on our top 50 countdown, Hey Girl. Now, I mentioned a few minutes ago that local artists did make the top 50 of the year, and here's another prime example. Debbie Duval was one, and so was Luigi Sacco, who we all got to know as Lou Christie. Lou Christie's career began in his hometown. He's from Moon Township. I used to take him to National Record Marts, where the kids could meet him, and almost destroy the store, so we had to stop that. But his second big hit, here it comes, Two Faces Have I, number 45 on our top 50 countdown from 620 KHB.
Two faces have I. Yeah, I'm in my chair.
I can't get used to losing you, no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you.
620 KHB, Chuck Brinkman here with your top 50 countdown from 1963. Andy Williams, remember the Andy Williams show? Well, he had hit records too. Number 44, Can't Get Used to Losing You. We got a lot to go, and we're glad you're listening on this wonderful Labor Day weekend. How about number 43? Here comes a group that was so popular all over Western Pennsylvania. I used to do record hops in Greensburg, and I had to bring every Smokey Robinson of the Miracles record with me because they loved it there. And one reason was Mickey's Monkey.
All right, is everybody ready?
In the morning, a hammer in the evening.
KHB, you're listening to the Top 50 Countdown from 1963. I'm Chuck Brinkman. If I had a hammer, that was Trinidad Lopez. He had the big version in Pittsburgh. Peter, Paul, and Mary also scored with it, but it was all Trini Lopez on Western Pennsylvania airwaves. We're coming up to survey song number 41, a Japanese import, a young man who surprised everybody with his wonderful singing. Of course, the song is Sukiyaki. You might remember it as we play it here on 620 KHB.
Everybody say yeah. Say yeah. Say yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How about a car effect that you're going to do?
620 KHB, and the countdown continues with song number 40 of the top 50, Stevie Wonder and Fingertips. Now, in 1963, I emceed a show at Soldiers and Sailors Hall with 12-year-old Stevie Wonder at the time. The crowd was really into him. The audience was small, but it was a great venue and a great show. And actually, that same announcer man came out and said, Stevie Wonder, little Stevie Wonder, come on back. So it was quite a night at Soldiers and Sailors Hall. No more, I guess. At the end of the world, there's Skeeter Davis. This is a lady who had been married to a disc jockey in Nashville, Tennessee. He's still on the air. Ralph Emery. Maybe you remember her song, The End of the World. The late Skeeter Davis on 620 KHB.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they know?
620 KHB, we're counting them down from 1963, and there's a song you still hear today everywhere, and everybody loves to dance to. Aluai Luai. Nobody ever really figured out the lyrics to that, but that's what makes the charm of Louie Louie by the Kingsmen, once again at Survey Song number 38. We're counting them down all the way to number one. We're glad you're with us and hope you're enjoying the music and the memories we're creating here. The wall-to-wall sound of girl groups came into big play in 63, and the man behind it was Phil Spector, who was just recently convicted of murder. He's now in jail with, believe it or not, Charles Manson, who came to him and asked him to help him produce some music, and Phil did not answer his request.
WHBQ. There you have a little good old Pittsburgh rock and roll on Market Scope. If you'd like to contribute to Market Scope, either by recording bits of radio stations or just featuring a station you feel is unique or exceptionally good, just send a recording to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351 1652. All the folks who enjoy this brief tape contribution would be most appreciative. Now, here are the musings from the members.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Members may muse by calling the Action Line 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is Mike Lance in Miami Beach, Florida. I know the name of that song. It's called Love is Like an Itching in My Heart, I Do Believe. And it's by Diana Ross and the Supremes, and came out in 1965.
Hi there, this is Don Finney calling from Miami, Florida. How many stations in the United States do you know have never ever changed their format, either on AM or FM, with the same format that they've had since they came on the air?
Well, Don, that's an interesting question, and I don't know if there is a simple answer without auditing every radio station in the United States. So I'm going to leave you to that task of doing that research. I can tell you of one station, and that is WPOS 102.3, signed on as a religious station back in the late 60s, and it's been a religious station ever since. Privately owned and operated in Holland, Ohio, a suburb of Toledo. And that's our musings to the members. And if you would like to muse, you just simply call this telephone number, area code 646-402-5685, and when prompted, enter the code 62544. Our 360 phone numbers are, kind of in limbo at the present time. The musings line you should not use. However, we are tipped off by Phil Wayne that our area code 360-382-1957, our office number, has been restored. It's working, and I don't know why, but let's just count our blessings, okay? But if you would like to muse, please call area code 646-402-5685, and when prompted, enter 62544. Remember, don't call the musings line with the area code 360 number.
This report is from Neil Kazaros of Illinois. Kaz, as he is affectionately known, has been doing bogs or beverages on the ground. DXers have been asking about how to phase bogs to use them to eliminate pests while reaching for that desired station. First of all, I strive to get my bog wires close to the ground. For example, across low-cut grass on dirt or mulch or in my driveway. I want to take advantage of the fact that the antenna seems to work better when the wires are very close to the ground. This helps give me an antenna with similar pointing characteristics to an elevated beverage antenna. The field to the east of my house here in Illinois is about 85% the size of a football field and nearly as flat as one, and it's low cut. If you have to work with undergrowth or tall grasses, I've found that the quickest way to get the wire close to the ground is to roll the spool on the ground and then walk back and forth and try to get the wire lower by stepping on it. I strongly recommend cord winders for bog wires as they make it easy to install and super easy to pick up. These things cost about $7 at Home Depot or Lowe's. Once the bogs are down, we turn to phasing them by electronically adjusting their effects relative to each other. The simplest phased bog system, and one that's very easy to use, will likely result in many new mid- and high-band loggings for most domestic DXers due to a fine null to the back and good pointing characteristics to the front. It consists of two wires or bogs laid on the ground and some phaser electronics to create the pest nulling. I usually DX out of my truck, and I use a quantum phaser with battery pack. Other phasers should also work, so feel free to test them or homebrew your own. I usually run the ends of the bog wires under the truck doors and hook them to the phaser on the passenger seat. Very simple, I think, and very easy to set up, and I can break it down quickly. My approach may bend some traditional rules of beverages and phasing, but it doesn't hurt performance for many de-expeditions in my fields, and it means that setup and takedown only take about 10 minutes. I will describe the 320-degree phased bog system I have been recently using here in Illinois. Power line interference mostly went away earlier in the year, allowing me to park at the southeast end of my field and find no electrical noise most of the time. The main bog wire runs from under my truck door, slopes down to ground, and has a total length of 330 feet. It is straight as an arrow and aimed about 320 degrees on the compass. Since 330 feet is relatively short for a bog, I want the wire very straight to try to narrow the beam width or the best angle of good signal pickup. The second wire runs out under the same truck door and is 200 feet long. When I've spooled out the length of wire I want for these quick setups, I just leave the spool of wire on the ground, and this doesn't seem to hurt performance. The wires are very close together where they enter my DX truck, and they pass under my legs and then hook up to the phaser. No apparent problem with this closeness. The wires on the ground are parallel and separated by about a foot and a half. That distance on the ground isn't critical, and I've used them 1 foot apart or 3 feet apart, and the phased bog system is just as effective. A word about the different wire lengths. The 130-foot difference seems to work well for phasing at the upper end of the AM band. If you have wires the same length, the phaser sees identical signal strengths and phases and tends to null everything. So some length difference is desirable. On the other hand, if you make the shorter wire too short, its beam width widens too much for my purposes. Longer bogs would be more effective for the lower end of the band, but I have no more room here toward the northwest. I use longer bogs to the east-northeast in Wisconsin for mid-latitude TAs and South American Spanish stations to New England and New York State. In Wisconsin, I tend to use about 180 or 190 feet difference in length. This seemed right when I got Ireland on 549 in Wisconsin. I was using 729 feet parallel with 551 feet. This also made me think I was DXing from Spain, with Spanish stations showing up all over the dial on the bogs aimed at 64 degrees. Last time in Wisconsin, I used 415 feet of wire parallel to 281 feet, aimed more northerly, and while I'd like longer wires for the lower end of the band, I was able to capture Syria, Spain, and Mauritania on 783, with Chicago's WBBM 92 miles away to the backside of the antenna. This should seem to indicate a decently performing antenna system. The exact lengths of bogs for the phased bog system aren't critical, and I don't feel that the difference in lengths is critical either. A difference of about 100 to 200 feet seems to work well. The low end of the band with my shorter wires here in Illinois seems somewhat attenuated after phasing, but I was able to get CKUA 580, so it indicates it can still provide some nice DX. Okay, so you have your two parallel bogs down, and it's time to phase them to null pests from the back end of the bog. Compare back end signal amplitudes, and they are usually similar. Make whatever quick phaser adjustment is needed to get their signals close to equal, and then adjust the phase as needed to null. Tweak back and forth, adjusting amplitude and phase until you greatly reduce that back-end pest. The nulls are reasonably broad-banded and decently wide. You can use a target station to give you a phasing null that will work for most of the stations on that part of the dial. Phasing WRTO 1200 is good for much of the upper band. Phasing WLAC 1510 tends to require a bit different phaser tweaking, and it's good for the very high band here in Illinois. Phasing WMVP at 1000 seems good for mid-band. WMVP is southeast of here, but the null of WMVP also reduces things like KDKA and WBZ and KYW to the east, enough to tell there are other stations underneath. We have described the phasing of signals from the rear of the bog array. The array can also be used to null pests from the front, the direction it points. While we sometimes orient the bog so the back end is pointed toward the pest, you need to consider that the bog has a limited amount of sensitivity, so it's usually best to point the front end of the array right at the desired station. And just because we usually use the back end to null stations, that doesn't mean we can't hear DX from that direction. 2 years ago, and a few times in auroral conditions, the back ends of my phased TA bogs provided a pipeline to Veracruz. Now a word on the termination. For a beverage antenna to deliver most of its signal into the receiver, DXers usually put a termination resistor on the end opposite the radio. This quickly phased BOG system requires no termination. While it might be nice to terminate the front end, to do so requires a circuit to ground, and I seriously don't recommend putting ground rods on land you don't own. Termination can help reduce back-end interference, but I've never seen it do a good job across the entire broadcast band. More on termination in a later post, but for quick use and casual use, don't worry about it. Just phase a pair of different length parallel BOGs and enjoy. A recent modification seems quite useful for the upper band. I strongly believe that the best performance and the most broad-banded nulls, for example, for these Perseus users who record the entire band, can be obtained from parallel staggered BOGs or beverage antennas that are actually the same length. With that in mind and wanting to use a shorter BOG to narrow its beam a bit, I decided to try extending the back end of the shorter BOG and then bend it back to my DX truck and phaser. So now, while my 330-foot BOG at 320 degrees remains the same length, the shorter wire still runs 200 feet to my truck, but then passes under it and goes another 50-some feet, and then bends back 180 degrees and comes back to my DX truck and hooks up to the phaser. I call this doubling back. This will be seen as having the effect of somewhat staggering two BOGs, and the results seem to be more signal left over when I phase the back-end pests. This double-backed BOG usually has a bit more back-end pest signal than my longer straight one described earlier, so phaser adjustments will be different. But it really seems that I have more signal left after nulling, across the band, and especially across the high end of the band. When I phase null to the Palatine TIS on 1660 kHz, due southeast, WTDY, due northwest on 1670, isn't any weaker on the phased combo than on a single wire, and some upper band stuff is honestly a bit stronger on the pair. The back null also seems to be somewhat more broadbanded now. This is exactly the effect that I want, and that bit of added signal can make all the difference in pulling out DX from the mess. I'll make a more exhaustive test of this concept in Wisconsin, where I have more room, and where I don't have Chicago's pests to make a mess of daytime DX in that direction. More later, 73's Kaz. And that's part one of the report from Neil Kazaros. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Mark. Now let's turn our ears to a receiver review. This one is on the new Texan PL310 Ultralight Radio, and Texan is spelled T-E-C-S-U-N. According to the reviewer, this is an awesome performer on three bands. This article is by Gary DeBrock of Pull You Up, Washington. Gary writes, "For those of you waiting on a detailed report before considering the purchase of the latest DSP Wonder from the Chinese domestic market, the four-band investigation of the new Texan PL310 Longwave AM FM Shortwave DSP Enhanced Pocket Radio has been concluded here, and the results are very impressive. The long-wave performance has been significantly improved from the PL300WT, which is, by the way, known as the Grundig G8. So that competitive beacon reception is possible using only the stock loopstick antenna. Last night at 0800 UTC, I was able to log the following beacons on these approximate frequencies, and keep in mind he's in Washington State. NY351, ZP369, MOG405, and also QQ398. Of these four beacons, the PL300WT, also known as the Grundig G8, had only a trace of NY351 and none of the others. On AM, I ran a detailed shootout between the new PL310 and the Kashibo D96L, the winner of the recent 2009 Ultralight Radio AM DX shootout. The PL300WT was thrown in also. The sensitivity of the PL310 and the D96L models are very close overall, but the PL310 has a decided edge in the mid-frequency range of 700 to 1500 kHz, while the D96L has a slight edge on the extreme upper and lower band frequencies. Both the PL310 and the D96L walked all over the PL300WT, or the Grundig G8, in sensitivity, while in the selectivity tests, the PL310 and the D96L had exactly equal performance, which was far superior to the PL300WT. On FM, the performance of the new PL310 matches the stellar PL300WT completely in both sensitivity and selectivity. So FM DXing enthusiasts now have another fantastic ultralight radio to choose from. Both of these models walked all over the D96L in the FM performance tests, presumably because of the D96L's shorter whip antenna. On shortwave, the irritating AM spurs and mixing products of the PL300WT have been corrected in the PL310, which provides sensitivity equal to that of the PL300WT without the side effects. The shortwave performance of the new PL310 was also quite impressive, but was a shade less than that of the E100 or the PL200 models, making this the only band in which a competing ultralight radio was able to slightly exceed the PL310 in performance. The full details on the Texan PL310's performance will be provided in a future mini-review on this brand-new receiver, which should be wrapped up in a few months. In general, this new DSP model seems to be all we have ever hoped for, and perhaps even more.
There's an old saying, "From the little acorn a mighty oak grows." The meaning is that great things may come from small beginnings. This is exactly the vision of Mother Mary Angelica. It was in the early 1960s when Mother Mary Angelica, a poor Clare nun, started on her mission to fulfill a promise made to the Lord at Our Lady of Angels Monastery in Irondale, Alabama. Mother Angelica began writing mini-books or short teachings on a variety of religious themes, and soon thereafter received requests for speaking engagements. This, in turn, evolved into a video series of her talks, taped at a local Birmingham television station. The poor Clare nun, who knew little of the world of technology and communication, went on to build her own television studio in 1981 in the garage of the monastery in Irondale, which today is home to Eternal Word Television Network. EWTN, or the Eternal Word Television Network, airs family and religious programming from a Catholic point of view in English and Spanish. It provides more than 80% original programming. This week, Pope Benedict XVI has honored Mother Mary Angelica for founding the network. The Pope awarded Mother Mary the Cross of Honor for distinguished service to the Roman Catholic Church. It's the highest honor a Pope can bestow. Along with the 86-year-old Mother Mary, Deacon Bill Steltemeyer was also honored. Mr. Steltemeyer left his Tennessee law practice to help found EWTN.
I'm sure you heard the old saying about putting your money where your mouth is. Did you know that words actually do cost money? CW is the abbreviation for Morse code. The CW comes from continuous wave, or the method of turning on and off a transmitter to form dots and dashes, which make up the letters of the alphabet. Now pay attention to this story, kids, as there's a connection to a coast-to-coast AM radio host. And no, it's not because Art Bell is an amateur radio operator, but it does involve Art in a certain way. The longest Morse code message ever sent took place on October 26 of 1864. That's when the then-governor of the territory of Nevada, James W. Nye, ordered that a telegram be sent to President Abraham Lincoln that contained the entire text of the Nevada State Constitution. According to historians, the job of sending such a long telegram at the height of the Civil War was a challenge. This is because there was no direct link from Carson City, Nevada, to Washington, D.C. So telegrapher James H. Guild worked 7 hours to transmit the message first to Salt Lake City, Utah, where it was sent to Chicago, Illinois, then to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and finally to the War Department's telegraph office in Washington, D.C. There, 2 days later, where a 175-page transcript was made. The final page shows a total of 16,543 word count at a cost of $4,313.27 to send in $1,860. And now, just to put this in perspective, in today's dollars, that would be $59,229 to pay for a one-way transcript of a transmission via telegram. 3 days later, after receiving this telegram, and in accordance with an act of Congress, President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed that Nevada was admitted to the Union. This 175-page transcript is now in the holdings of the National Archives and is on display in an exhibit entitled Big. That exhibit celebrates the 75th anniversary of the National Archives by featuring big records, big events, and, of course, some very big ideas. And the connection to a coast-to-coast AM radio host? Well, have you ever heard about Nye County, Nevada, which was named after the governor of the territory of Nevada, James W. Nye? Nye County, a.k.a. the Kingdom of Nye, where Pahrump, Nevada is located. Pahrump, Nevada is where Art Bell lives. And now there's the connection. The National Archives Big Exhibit runs through January 3rd of 2010 in Washington, D.C. It will then be sent out on a national tour. And now you know, a radio story. In FM and TV DXing recently, there was a great opening on the FM and TV bands. How great was that opening? Some Canadian DXers were able to watch Colombian TV, that's right, over the top of the United States and Caribbean to see Columbia TV channels. And it's always a good question to ask, how far can a television signal or FM signal travel? Well, I don't know if there's a specific record, but the BBC seems to have an early record of long-distance reception. BBC Radio 4 has broadcast an item in their Making History show about the reception during the 1930s of USA TV transmissions in the United Kingdom by pioneering radio amateurs such as Douglas Walter, G5CV. Could a well-known radio ham have picked up a television signal from America in the 1930s? More than three decades before the Telstar satellite enabled regular transmissions over the Atlantic. Well, that's the assertion of BBC Radio 4's Making History listener, Jeff Gilham, who discovered a letter to the Times from a Douglas Walters, G5CV, that claimed just that. With the help from Ian Baird, of the National Media Museum in Bradford, and Giles Reed, G1MFG, from the Radio Society of Great Britain, Making History's Dylan Winter pieced together the early history of television and showed that Walters, a journalist with the Daily Herald, was one of several amateurs who helped shape the future of television. The 1920s and 1930s was a period in which many individuals and commercial organizations were playing around with television. There were problems providing sound and picture at the same time, and viewing images as well. However, early TV signals used both the shortwave and medium-wave radio bands, and this meant that they could be picked up over considerable distances, particularly at night. The scientific reasons were less understood at the time, but it explains Walter's success in picking up the test transmission from New York City. The Making History show was broadcast on BBC Radio 4 at 1500 British Standard Time on Tuesday, October 6, and can be heard on the web by the following URL, www.bbc.co.uk/programs, spelled P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E-S, /B00N0Z. 41. By the way, MP3 podcasts can also be downloaded from www.bbc.co.uk/podcasts. podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, / series, S-E-R-I-E-S, / mhistory, M-H-I-S-T-O-R-Y. On a sad note, Jim Nettleton, age 69, a longtime radio announcer and prolific voiceover artist, who was one of the boss jocks on famous 56 WFIL, died a week ago due to lung cancer. The Cherry Hill resident also worked for Philadelphia's WCAU-FM in the 1970s and as a disc jockey and program director, and most recently at WOGL, formerly WCAU, and WPEN-AM. His advertising clients range from Cadillac to Uhlinger Beer. A native of Boston, Mr. Nettleton moved to New Jersey and enrolled at Rutgers University to study journalism. In a 2007 interview on a website, he recalled how he got his first start in business. A friend urged him to try out as an announcer for the college radio station's weekend show, Nightlife, named after the school's Scarlet Knight mascot. I had always enjoyed listening to the radio, but never gave it a second thought as a career. He said, "I auditioned, I got the spot, and immediately I fell in love with the business." Mr. Nettleton left college after 3 months and did some odd jobs, working his way onto the air during the heady time, early days of rock and roll. He first worked at WPAZ-AM in Pottstown, and then at stations in Eatontown, New Jersey, and Connecticut, where he earned the nickname Diamond Jim. He came to Philadelphia to join WFIL in 1966 as one of the original boss jocks. He recorded thousands of commercials and other voiceovers for hundreds of clients. According to one of his friends, he must have been a speed reader because he would give him a piece of copy and he would just glance at it without reading it aloud, and then he'd do it in one take perfectly. From 1984 to 1993, Mr. Nettleton worked in Florida as a radio announcer and a production manager, consultant, and programming for clients in 33 states. He is survived by his wife Diane, sons Todd and Ted, daughter Tammy, and 7 grandchildren. Let's give a listen to this amazing talent.
WFIL, Philadelphia, where the hits keep coming 24 hours a day.
You say yes.
Yeah, but what?
I say no.
Beatles do it.
You say stop. But I say go, go, go.
House of the Beatles, number one, as we hear WFIL Philadelphia on a top 10 twin spin. That's hello, goodbye. 5:34 is break the bank time with $86 in the jackpot. Gotta try to give that away in a second.
WFIL Future 6.
Give something away right now to Mrs. Aubrey Fisher, 113 Brennan Drive at Todd Estates in Newark, Delaware. As a holiday ham going out to you, Mrs. Fisher, and your family with our congratulations. Hope you enjoy it. More winners are coming up. Future 6 sound from the Dell. Great sound from the Dells at WFIL Philadelphia. That's There Is Gonna Be a Giant Record. Future 6 here where it counts, friend. 5:37 on the Jim Nettleton Show. 51 outside. A good looking Tuesday evening. Wes is gonna be better.
Have you tried today's new lamb?
Don't go crazy this holiday season running from store to store like some kind of a nut. ShopRite has everything you need for the holidays, from soup to nuts. And it's all priced to please. Why pay more? I'm brought to you by the American Lamb Council.
WFIL.
Yes, sir. And we've got 5:38 here. WFIL break the bank time. $86 is in the jackpot right now. We're going to try to get that away in just a second. Another call will be going out. All you have to do is know the total. Winner today, earlier, here on the Jim Nettleton Show, of $206. Darlene Spencer from East Chestnut Street in Norristown collected that amount when we called her, and we said, how much is in the jackpot? Zip. Right away, she said $206, and she got it. And friend, if you've been looking for some good Christmas gifts at a reasonable price, and you want to give something nice to your family, why don't you drop by the new Morgan Stern Warehouse store at the northeast corner of 15th and Fairmont Avenue. They take pride in presenting the latest 1968 Zenith color TV at the lowest prices ever. See a complete display of beautiful handcrafted consoles, table models, and portables, too. See the giant 295-square-inch color set with Zenith's exclusive color tuning. Now, you never worry about color tuning. And with a flick of a switch, zing, your color is perfect from station to station. station. Of course, the set may not be so good. But now, also great buys on radios, record players, and black and white portables. Now, what's the best color TV to buy? Ask a TV serviceman, and surely he's going to say Zenith. And the best place to buy? Ask your neighbor. He'll say Morgenstern, because he lives right next door. Now, the Morgenstern Warehouse Store at 15th and Fairmont has all the new 1968 Zenith color TVs on display. Exclusive Zenith Space Command for remote control tuning, available on most models. Morgenstern's recommends Zenith color TV, and everybody recommends Morgenstern. Good reason for that. Come to the corner of 15th and Fairmont Avenue. I'll be wearing a carnation. Make your selection, or you can shop from home, order by phone, P03-1800. That's P03-1800. That's Morgenstern's Warehouse. Make it on over there. Shall we have
he
a holiday?
55 show? And 25.
The most music on
77 WABC.
WABC, New York.
Jim Middleton. Another hour of music.
Hey, they did it. They did it better than you did, Bruce. I did it. I was listening earlier. Listen to him trying to pronounce my name, and I want to tell you, we're not going to get along at all.
Sugar.
If you're going to start, you might as well start at the top, right? That's number one at WABC from the Archie, Sugar Sugar, which by now you know. 10:03, some gold from Stevie.
La, 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 la,
Stevie Wonder, that's some gold, little recent stuff. My Sherry and
all. WABC!
10:06, WABC Chime Time. Hi, and good evening. I just want to take a moment here to say what a pleasure it is to be at WABC New York, and I want to say hi to a lot of the friends of mine over in North Jersey, particularly, here in the city, and I know a lot of folks down in Philadelphia. That's our sister city, down the river there, are listening to that. I want to welcome them aboard, too. We're going to fool around here till 3 o'clock in the morning. Les Marshak will take over then.
Also, some other sad news to report, and that is a former National Radio Club member, Chris Johnson, K2FO, ex-K4NHL, and ex-WB2RJL of Taylor, South Carolina, passed away on September 20th of a heart attack, and our condolences go out to his family. However, we do have some good news for frequent NRC convention attendees. Everyone knows Mike Lance, who's just acquired a new guide dog, a black Labrador retriever named Bailey, who replaced his former guide dog, Lexi, who died last summer after a brief illness. In the past couple of months, I've had two such letters dealing with the issue of Canadian stations giving a legal ID. And I guess if you're talking about a United States station, we have one set of rules. Canada has a different set of rules. So I thought this article written by Sean Axelrod in the DX Toolbox section of DX News is very appropriate. So let me read this to you. This time around, we have an introduction to Canadian radio. Once you have spent some time DXing on the broadcast bands, both AM and FM, you'll notice that there is a difference between the Canadian and American radio stations. These differences may be subtle, and some may be more noticeable. In this article, I will attempt to outline these differences in an effort to help you out with your IDing of some of the stations up here in the Great White North. IDs? We don't need any IDs. Yes, up here, some stations, particularly those on the FM band, may never give what you would call a legal ID, as the American stations have to do once each hour. Canadian stations, as far as I can figure out, must give their legal call sign once an hour, but many never do. The CBC is the worst offender of never giving a legal ID. This can lead to stations using only their slogans as an ID. This may be catchy and keep listeners' attention, but it does nothing for the DXer. If you're looking for a legal ID containing a call sign, frequency, and location as given in the United States, you may have a long wait with some of the Canadian stations. Often, relays never give a separate ID at all, just one from the main station. a slogan may have to do for many stations here in Canada. To help you ID many of these stations, you might have to go with a slogans list that can be found online or in the National Radio Club's AM logs. Call signs. Yes, even if they do not use them at all stations do have a call sign. All of the stations in Canada will have a call sign that starts with a C. Well, almost all of them. In the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, they still use the call signs that start with VO. These stations were allowed to keep their old call signs when Newfoundland and Labrador joined Canada as a province in 1949. There are fewer and fewer of these VO calls, and they easily stick out if you happen to hear one. However, any station in Newfoundland and Labrador that wishes to obtain a new call sign or apply for a new station must take a call sign starting with a C, as is the case for the rest of Canada. In fact, the call signs not only start with a C, but due to international allocations, all AM and FM stations in Canada will start with either CB, CF, CH, CI, CJ, CK, VF, and VO only. You'll also find that some relay stations will have the same call sign as their main station, but will have a number after the call sign to distinguish them from one another. This is particularly true of the CBC relay stations. As an example, here in Manitoba, we have CKSB on 1050 in Winnipeg, with one of many relays, CKSB2, on 860 in St. Lazare. There's a definite difference between U.S. Canadian stations on AM and FM bands. As well, many relay stations that run under 100 watts start VF and then four numbers. These will not ID separately, but will use the call sign of the originating station. Almost all of the CBC, or Canadian Broadcasting Corporation stations, start with the two letters CB. This is another oddity of Canadian radio. If you look in the international allocated call signs, you'll see that the entire CB call sign block is allocated to Chile in South America and not Canada. This means that, technically, most CBC stations are using illegal call signs. However, there is an out for the CBC, as the international agreement states that stations can call themselves whatever they want. The good old CBC has decided to borrow these call signs. Some of the TIS stations in Canada also use these CB calls, and may add a P after the CB. This is done as the TIS stations are licensed to the CBC here in Canada as part of the service to the public. Also, if you look through the TIS listings, that most Canadian TISs are not allocated on 530 or 1610, but are located throughout the AM band. There is a movement to FM, where most of the new applications for TIS are being made. Hey, one last thing before we wrap it up on this edition of the DX Audio Service. I'm sure you're aware of the holiday season fast approaching us. Why not take a moment to give us a call on the Musings line, rewind the tape back to the beginning of the Musings, you can get the number, and just call up and wish everyone a happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, whatever you want to do. Give us just a quick call. Give us your name and your best wishes. I think it'd be kind of nice for the next edition of the DX Audio Service. That's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. I'm going to get back to loading in some more music into WNRC and playing around here in the studio while I have some time. Hey, how about a nice Motown track to take us out on this edition? We'll see you next month.
You know, that's one of the more recognizable guitar licks of the early Motown days. And when I originally played it 27 years ago, I didn't think much about it, only that it worked. In the small confines of Studio A, myself and the rest of the musicians didn't realize what an impact we'd have on the rest of the world.
My girl, take six.